Welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled, Your Fantasy is No One's Reality. And it is about the difference between being a fantasy baseball fan and playing fantasy baseball, which I think is two very different experiences. Our guest for this episode is someone who knows a little something about playing fantasy baseball, Miss Ann Volk. You're back. And so not only were you the first female guest in the history of We're All Gonna Die, you are now the first repeat guest.
Wow. Do I get a prize here?
Do you get a prize? Do you get ham and a plaque, maybe?
Oh, there
or,
we go.
Or something? Or I don't know. You should get something, but you're kind of not going to get anything,
okay.
Unfortunately. But so you play fantasy baseball. I think you're a little more actually versed and, sadly, successful than I am. So why do you waste your time on something so trivial and pointless?
I love baseball.
Love baseball. So you just whittle away hours in a dark room.
I always have
a computer.
Yes.
Just nothing.
Yes. And I think that fantasy baseball has probably, I probably fell away from the sport. I grew up loving baseball. I mean, I could sit and tell you the batting averages of every single person in the major league at one point in my life. I read the sporting news from cover to cover. Mm. I knew everything. As a matter of fact, I always remember getting invited. I did this work study job at St. Francis, and they used to have this consultant from New York City come in periodically. Mm. And he used to say, invite that girl to lunch because she can talk to me about baseball.
Yeah.
And so I would get, but then I kind of fell out with, I had people, you know, with, it's all rigged. The World Series is rigged. And so I kind of fell out of it for a while. And I think fantasy has kind of renewed my love of baseball.
Oh, really? Well, you know, I went through this sort of the same thing where there was a time in my life, I think when I was in high school, that I could have, you know, remembered the starting eight for most teams, or like the seven of the starting eight, you know, and the beginning of the rotation and the closer for every team. Which I think says something about kind of baseball fandom. Is that it does breed this kind of weird obsessiveness.
Yes, it does.
And this weird sort of numbers-driven kind of game. Which I find fascinating because it's also, you know, baseball, I think, of the major sports is one of the most humanistic. Mm. You know, there's these moments where everybody pauses and you're left with nothing but the human form. It's the sport without a clock.
Yes.
You know, it's
which
people.
Which drives people nuts.
Yes. And people have to do stuff for it to be over. You know, that's, I find, fascinating. Instead of, just sit on the ball and the time runs out. So it is this incredibly humanistic thing. I mean, you ever think about, you know, even just the ergonomics of a bat and a ball and how perfectly they fit in the human hands. You know, it's a very humanistic thing. But then there's also this numbers, data, human computer thing, which is very not humanistic.
I know.
But that is part of baseball fandom. Mm-hmm. And I think there is that kind of weird schizophrenia. And so the reason why I thought of this topic and thought about talking to you is the way that weird schizophrenia gets kind of flipped with fantasy, because it really is data and numbers and complicated computerized calculations that is what drives a fantasy.
Well, it does, yes.
Yes.
Yes, so you got, you know, categories and comparing categories and looking at, you know, when we were doing the drafts recently for the two leagues that the slow drafts that I'm in,
yeah,
it was like looking at
that.
You
I was
know,
doing too.
Yes,
I was
and
in
that,
one of those
and
leagues,
look,
yeah.
But I don't know if you were as obsessively looking at things like
obsessively looking. I think what's my team name?
What is your team? The Sucks. Wait,
the Sucksville Suck Sox. You know, is the first year that I played. It was a 20-team league. Mm-hmm. I think the bottom two teams were pretty much abandoned.
And
I was
you
18th.
Were the end. Yes.
Yes, I was 18th. The person who was actually checking every day. I was in dead last place. I finished in 10th last year at 20-team
league.
You
did. You did better than I did last year. And I said, but I feel this pressure as being the only woman playing
in this league. Yeah, that is kind of a weird dynamic.
Yes, to try no to just girls say allowed. I'm just yes, and I did get that the 1 year I finally broke the barrier of the no girls allowed league, but I still do feel that pressure of you know people just thinking, oh, she's just a girl, and.
So talk to me about this numbers-driven obsessiveness that is being kind of good at it or wanting to be good at it. Well, if you're driven to then want to be successful at being a fantasy baseball manager, what goes into that? Or what's your thought process when, you know, because that's the absurd thing about a slow draft is you have to think, who is the 221st best player in Major League Baseball
because right that's now? My turn.
That's my turn. And you have to think in those terms. Mm-hmm. Who's 221?
You know? And it depends. You got to look at ESPN, CBS Sports, Yahoo.
Yeah, that's
Sporting
so horrifying.
News.
I find it. Know. It's like I do it, and I've agreed to do it for now it's 3 years in a row. Is the longest I've stuck with it. In a way, that's kind of horrifying. Because the other thing about why why I was 18th in the 20-team league is I went with guys that I knew. And they were all old and broken.
Yes.
And so last year, I had to mediocre picking young guys I had never heard of before.
See, and you did better.
And they were really good. And it was just like, I don't know these people. I have no idea. You know, the American League is still this very strange land where the pitchers don't hit. I don't understand it. You know, Chicago has another team. Like, what the hell is that, you know? And so... What the hell is that? And but yet you find these, you know, Eric Hosmer of the Kansas City Royals, you know, who I drafted. Oh, well, he's probably, 238 or something. You know, whatever the hell that is. Like, what is the thought? So you look at all of those things.
You do. And you look at, and you can't necessarily look at, although I still do look at what kind of a spring they're having, but... The spring never necessarily
means. Look at
I do.
Yeah.
I look at their spring stats in MLB. I look at what all the people are saying about them. And I'm like, I mean, I really do kind of agonize over it all. Now I am a numbers person, so I do get into numbers and probabilities. I teach statistics, so I get into probabilities along the way there, but I do kind of obsess about, okay, well, should I pick him or him? And if I don't pick him this round, will I lose him by the next round?
I was slotting Lucas Duda. It's just who was IQ the whole time, and I'm like, he's not in the top. He's not in the first 20. No, somebody took him in the 18th round, and I was like, that man's insane. Lucas Duda in the 18th. Why would you take him in the 18th round? He might be a platoon player, you know. And all of that, I find again, it's one of those, you know, modern humans, contemporary humans, like we create these problems for ourselves. Or we create these situations where we can get so far removed from reality.
Oh, I know. And like, does it really matter in the
little Keebler tree that we have to think about things on this level of minutiae? You know, it used to be only, the idea of the ivory tower egghead. That was the only person who knew stuff or thought about things on that level, and now it's become this democratized. Everybody thinks about things on that level now, and so it's
well, at least those of us that play in fantasy leagues do think.
Yeah,
about
which
that.
is the thing, but I think for me too is that I think in a way too, the fan experience. Let's not talk about fantasy for a while, but talking about just going to a game, having a favorite team that's like a real team with like people on it and uniforms and everything. How so much of the fan experience is inherently irrational. You know, I mean, I hate Jerry Seinfeld, but there was a great bit he had, when Daryl Strawberry signed the free agent thing. You know, he went to the Dodgers and the Met fans booed him, and it's like, where else in life can you boo a guy because he changed his shirt?
Well, that's true.
He changed his outfit, and now he's a horrible person, you know? That doesn't even really even happen in theater so much, you know? Or it seems more complicated than that. But the way Steinfeld put it, he made, you know, theater seem more complicated than that. But there is this inherent irrationality. There's that fine line, depending on what team that you root for, between hope and despair. That is a baseball, straight up baseball fan, is part of the experience, right?
Yeah.
But then we do this other thing that is like, I need more strikeouts.
Yes, you know? And then we're,
One of those new fancy, you know, statistics that nobody understands what they mean yet and how they're calculated. It's just, you got to have that number over 500.
That's it, yes. And then I think it's like, okay, so what if the pitcher that's pitching in your league is going against one of your batters? So if I have, you know, I don't know, Joey Votto batting up against John Neese, who are both on my fantasy team. What am I rooting for here? Do I want Neese to get the strikeout, or do I want Votto to get the home run? It's like, you know, so neither, yeah. You know.
Well, and I think that's the other thing is we got to talk about. And maybe, is it my neurosis too? I think my specific neurotic fandom of and you know, I'm a Mets fan, and I have to say, you know, that is a team that has, though they've won a championship in my lifetime, actually they won a championship the first year that I liked baseball, and I liked that team. How New York fan is that? Our bloated championship, yes. Full lives of New York fans, and that expectation we're going to win one every year. That team has psychologically damaged me in so many ways. Wow. You know, it is that. I mean, the Mets, you know, Bob Murphy had that great line when the 88 or 90 Dodgers had all these former Mets on them. They had like 8 guys who were on the Mets in their roster. He once said, you know, there's so many former Mets on the Dodgers that they should be in second place, you know? And just all of those kind of like, expectations unfulfilled. You know, the 86 Mets, one of the greatest teams ever, and they only won once. You know, and all of that, and even I could talk about an 06.
You don't even remember the amazing Mets.
I don't remember the 69 Mets. I don't remember the 73 Mets. In 06, my father passed away, and the Mets came at the end of that year here to Pittsburgh. The magic number was 1, and the whole time I was calculating it way out. And I'm like, am I going to get to see the Mets clinch in person?
Wow.
The only time I might ever get this chance in my life in this magical season. I wore my dad's Mets hat.
Wow.
To all 3 games. And they got swept by the Pirates, which that year was one of the years when the Pirates were one of the absolute worst teams in baseball. And the second place team, the Marlins, that season won all 3 games that weekend. And then they immediately, that Monday night, they clinched. You know? I mean, just that kind of damage, or thinking like, okay, but they're still going to win. And this will be, you know, this way of communing with my father or something, you know. I'll wear the hat during the World Series. And of course, Carlos Beltran struck out with the bases loaded in Game 7 of the NLCS. After Andy Chavez made that incredible team of destiny leaping over the wall catch. So I'm damaged. I'm hurt. Now there's the whole Bernie Madoff thing. You realize that it is a complete Mickey Mouse, horrible organization. And they'll never sell. And it'll just, I'm just doomed to disappointment for the rest of my life. And I'll only be released from that by death. You know, that kind of damage. So that's part of my emotional baggage that I bring to all baseball environments.
Wow. But I think I kind of, I've gotten a little more removed from that. And in that, when I was young, there were 2 teams I loved, and they were the A's and the Reds. And they were big time. And then when I fell out of baseball for a while, when I came back, I didn't automatically embraced the Reds. For a while, I embraced the Brewers because I was dating a guy that was a Brewers fan. So it became the team to go for. But I think I don't have a team right now, per se.
And I think that's easier because for me, in the first year, I always was, you know, guys would come up against the Mets. Absolutely. And the Mets were still a shred of good. And I was like, well, I don't want the Mets to lose. But if somebody's going to drive these runs in, it better be this guy because he's on my fantasy team.
That's right. And you start looking at that.
And that is so bizarre. I think that just broke me on a small level that I found myself thinking and caring that much. That while the real team that I've lived and died with since I was 9 years old, well, if they're going to lose, this guy's got two runners on. I need RBIs in my
life. So league. There you go. Let him
so
do
there
it.
You go. Which I think that's just too, I don't know, postmodern? That's just too nerdy? That's too much for me. I'm still doing this. So one of the things that I've done is I think I've brought some irrationality into what I do. And I've then rationalized it. Okay. So one of the things that I've done is I've made teams... there are teams that I refuse to have players from. There are teams that I refuse to draft from. I had an experience last year where somebody got traded to one of those teams. And luckily that guy just sucked, so I just released him.
So you didn't care.
So I didn't care, but it was I cannot have a player from this team on my team because they're evil and I can't root for them on any minute level. And I totally rationalized that. It's like, well, you know... That's fine.
And as a Mets fan, you can't. I know that you hate the Phillies. See,
I hate the Phillies.
I just know that
the first year,
you and Brian Davis hate the Phillies.
Yeah, well, we have to hate the Phillies. And the thing is that the first year I instituted this rule, my three teams were the Braves, the Phillies, and the Yankees, which at the time were probably the three best teams in baseball with the deepest roster, or one of the deepest rosters, and so all of those players were off the list.
So you lost
off the list. Yes. So it really hindered me. You know, of course, now that I have no pretense that Mets are not going to be good this year, it is going to be a horror show. It's going to be awful. Thank God for the Astros.
Did you draft any Mets?
Yeah, I got a couple guys on there. Did I get Niece? I think I got Niece, and. I think I got Niece, and so I got Think. But I will say I did pick Travis Hafner of the Yankees. But I think the Yankees are going to be horrible this year.
Yeah, they probably will be.
And I was kind of, if I were to like the American League, I guess the Indians, I like the Jake. Actually, I like that ballpark in Cleveland more than I actually like PNC Park, to be honest with you.
See, and I have not been to PNC Park, so...
Yeah, it's a place to sell Coors Light, and it's, you know... Well, baseball fan culture in Pittsburgh is weird, and maybe that's a different podcast than... Well, it's not, maybe not. Well, those folks, like, they don't know... Like, I've had to explain the infield fly rule to people at games.
Wow.
Or how people can, like, move a base up even though that guy caught the ball kind of stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, that's... like that degree of, we don't know what the hell's going on out here, but oh, Dippin' Dots. That is the Pirate game fan experience.
Well, and that's true too, yes. How much beer can you drink?
How much beer can you drink? How many wings can you shove down your gullet? That's the Pirate fan experience. You know, which is, you know. And it's foreign and weird to me. But... Now that so Travis Hafner was on the Indians, I actually have a Travis Hafner bobblehead in this room. And so I'm like, well, you know, they suck. And he's playing in that tiny little park and maybe he'll do good this year. So I did draft him, but I don't think they're any threat. I still hate the Phillies. I think I was even going to draft some Braves this year. Just now that I don't care, which I think is the other confession about and maybe why I'm a crappy fantasy owner or whatever, is I think last year I watched... two regular season games that I didn't go to.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't start watching till the playoffs. So it's like
see,
so
I'm
far
I'm
removed.
Very different. MLB Network is on my TV a lot.
Yeah. I watch it in the off season. But to actually have time in the summer to sit down and watch games, I go to games, you know. But that was the thing. Every year now, I go to more games than I watch on TV.
But that's a good thing. I mean, I think that's a good thing. More games. I used to always go to games.
Yeah.
And I guess this would be my third stadium of the Pirates if I actually.
Oh wow! So you were at Forbes.
So I did when I was young. I went to Forbes Field and.
You did Three Rivers.
Yes. So I guess I should get to PNC.
Get to PNC. Wait till the end of the year after the collapse.
After they're done, and then after it's the not inevitable
Kurt
anymore.
Clint Hurdle burned up the pitching sort of collapse. You can go.
Then I can go and have fun and.
Yeah, nobody will be there. Or go in the spring when it's still snowing.
Oh, no, I'll
just be frozen.
Not to do that.
Just dress warm. Dress layers.
And then I can see if I get... I said, I do remember once being threatened. I almost got punched out at a game.
Really?
Yes. Because, well, see, don't punch me out either, but... Because I never rooted for the Pirates, so...
No, I don't care about the Pirates.
So, but they were playing a doubleheader with the Phillies.
Okay.
So, a guy that I knew at St. Francis was a Phillies fan, and so he gave me this inflatable bat, Phillies bat, to take for the game, which I did. And so, went to this doubleheader.
I would punch you in the face right now.
And the Phillies... of course swept the doubleheader, and we were leaving the game afterward, and fortunately for me there was a guy in a Phillies hat in front of me, and he was the one that actually got slugged.
Good for him.
And so then I proceeded to shove the bat behind my back so that
which is the other thing is are there anecdotes about fantasy baseball? Are there? Do you have? It's like, oh my god! Remember that time when I drafted?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, you know, sometimes. I mean, maybe when you're really into it, you know, you do like, you know, you talk about those things like, why did you draft so and so in this round? Or, I mean, I know that there's somebody else in Happy Baseball who has trash talked me.
Really?
To Brian, to the
general manager of the league, the commissioner of the league.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, you know, I think that there are things that for people who are really into it that go on.
Which I guess is the thing. I guess it's the matter of maybe anything and how we're free in the modern world to kind of do whatever and be whatever. It's like anything that you want to make your home... you can make your home, you know, which is part of that expansion of kind of geek nerd culture into all facets of life. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary Trekkies, but it's about people who are just so just, they made two of them of people who are just so into Star Trek that it's unbelievable and they can't stop. And
I
all
know
of that.
People like that. So
I know people like that. Yeah. And I don't. But I mean, there's like a guy who's like a Star Trek dentist, like his whole dentist office, like the techs and the people who clean teeth, and they all wear like Starfleet commander uniforms. They talk with the Whitewater juror, the Clinton trial in the late 90s, where you know, she wore her Starfleet commander uniform to jury duty, and if like people want to do that, and I think it's So fantasy baseball is. A sport that was already kind of obsessy, you know, and kind of you have these connections and you can kind of know everything about a player. I'll never forget one of the moments that illustrated for me the difference between baseball and football is when I was caught in the first Steelers victory, when I lived here in Pittsburgh. I moved here in 2000. So whenever it was, they won the Super Bowl that year. I was supposed to teach the class on the day of the parade, the victory parade, which I thought, oh, well, this is going to disrupt. Well, no, it ran right through downtown. Two students showed up. Somebody else told me, yeah, I was stuck on a bus for an hour and a half trying to get to class. The university didn't cancel. I personally didn't cancel. I don't know what was wrong. But eventually there was nobody there. One of the students didn't have the book. Nobody read. And I was like, all right, cancel. I was like, well, damn it, I'll go watch the parade. I don't care. And it was, you know, they were wearing the starter, like, hey, we won the championship sweatshirt with the big stupid trophy on it and logos and whatever. And he said, and you couldn't, nobody had numbers. And at the time, a big guy for the Steelers on defense was Joey Porter. And he was very outspoken, and he was famous, and he made comments in the media. Well, standing out there in that parade, Joey Porter passed us 4 times. I heard people, it's Joey Porter! It's on the different floats. And finally, then it was Joey Porter.
Ah.
But I could never imagine that happening in a baseball parade. Like, you would know exactly who that person is, because they have tics, they have a weird batting stance, there is something about their delivery or the way that they throw that you get this time to absorb a person, and maybe a person's personality, at least, in the way that they play.
Well, and because it's a slower paced game, I mean, you see so much more.
Yeah, you see so much more, and you see faces instead of helmets. Helmets, you know. But I think it's weird. So it always was a game that was kind of breeds obsessiveness, and that's not a real word, but I like it. Obsessiveness. There's that game that breeds it, and now this is, it's this whole other level and this whole other focus, and it kind of, like, I do it, but it kind of freaks me out. And I don't know what to do with that.
See, and I guess it doesn't freak me out so much. Maybe because I love games.
Yeah.
And so I'm into competition, and
yeah,
I like that. Like, I'm already thinking about, yeah, I should pick up another league.
Really?
Yes. I'll do a fast draft. I'm waiting to see if we're going to do our ALNL only leagues.
Yeah,
last year I did 5.
You did 5.
Yeah.
See, I find one to be kind of onerous, and I got to log in every day and find out who's starting.
Check it with them, yes.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I still don't understand scoring of the game.
That's not a good idea.
That's not a good idea, huh, to not know, to play and not. So for a guy who didn't understand scoring, I did better than you last year.
I know you did, yes.
How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel like crap. That's
all right. Well, on that note, then, and leave you feeling like crap, it's now time for the bottom 5, a series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. Are you ready again, Anne, for
absolutely.
The bottom
it's
5?
It's like almost 4 in the morning. Sure.
Yes, it is almost 4 in the morning. So question 1, if you had to choose, would you welcome the total elimination of day or night? If you had to choose, the Earth is not rotating anymore. You could either be on the facing the sun side or eternal darkness side. Which one would you choose?
If I wanted to choose a side to stay with?
To stay with. Yeah. Or if you had some influence.
God.
Yeah, as a statistician, you were figuring out how the Earth's rotation was going to stop.
I think it would be
stop. Day.
I don't know. See, it's because when summer comes, I love being outside, and I love being in the sun.
Okay.
So I would have to, I think for that reason alone, I would have to say day.
Okay. Day's a good one. All right, eternal day. All right. Next question. Okay, this is kind of, okay, this is a weird one. Another weird one.
All right.
Okay, say you had access to a time machine.
Okay.
Okay. However, the purpose of this time machine was to go back in time so that you could meet a historical figure and have intercourse with that person, sexual intercourse with that person.
Wow.
What historical figure do you wish you could have sex with? Or who would you choose, I guess, if that was your mission as a time traveler to go do it with somebody? Who would you choose?
Wow.
Yeah.
So I can think of all these people currently that I would choose, but yeah. Let me think about that. It's somebody in the past, and
yes.
Where would I go back?
Yeah, I mean, you could go back to any point in human history.
Wow.
Time machine's limitless. Find that person. Which also, I guess the other part of this question is, this is almost like the plot of a really bad porn movie. Isn't it?
Like, let's do
history.
Lincoln,
yes. Yeah, that's right. You could do Lincoln, Washington, somebody who's not on money.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe I might like to do like Socrates or something like
that. Socrates, you go ancient Greek.
Yeah, kind of like the
foundation of Western metaphysics.
The depth of that would translate to the physical.
Oh, that's a good point. You know, of course, you read something like Plato's Phaedrus, and it gets kind of creepy. But yeah. So no,
to see whether that would translate into the whole physical experience.
That's right. Yeah, and you think that they were pre-Christian body shame? So who knows what that experience? Yes,
God knows what it would really be like. It could.
There
be scary.
You go. There you go. All right. Question 3. Of the living villains of history. So an evil person is still alive. Of the living villains of history, whose obituary would you like to write? And I have to give props where you're thinking there. I stole this question from Christopher Hitchens' Mortality.
Wow.
He got the diagnosis, and he's like, and he thought about Cardinal Ratzinger at the time and Henry Kissinger.
I do have to say, I thought about Ratzinger.
Ratzinger?
That would be, yes.
That would be a choice, possible choice.
Yes. Because I just think he's done so much ill for the... in terms of Catholicism. God, who else would it be? See, I almost want to look at the guy, and I don't even know his name, but the guy who does the Westboro Baptist Church.
Oh, Fred Phelps.
Yeah.
Fred Phelps, that's a good one.
You know,
Fred Phelps would be a good one.
And I'd like to write it like tomorrow, and that would be
would be a thing to write that tomorrow. Yeah, Fred Phelps. Which I guess though that's the thing though. I wonder about him though is because you'd have to. Would you feel a duty to humanize him somehow?
God, well.
You know, like, I mean, Hitler was a dog person.
I know, and they're probably, you know what I mean, which maybe it would be the thing for me to understand the human, you know, like, I don't understand him at all.
Yeah.
And so maybe, you know, in writing an obituary, maybe to find what makes him.
I'll tell you the thing about my theory is back when Michael Moore had the TV Nation TV series. Was it TV Nation or maybe it was Awful Truth? I forget which one. But he had this whole, like, Love Week episode or something where he went and brought, like, African-American cheerleaders to a Klan rally. Like, people who, like, would really, like, would go... He would confront hate groups with the people that they're hating.
Wow.
And he would do it kind of with humor and be like, hey, everybody! Well, he had a Winnebago full of gay guys. And so he's talking to Fred Phelps... And this Winnebago full of, you know, gay, and it had a flag on the side of it and whatever. It might have even been pink. And it was full of dudes. And Fred Phelps, oh, don't get me in there. I don't belong in there. And it was almost this, like, what I would imagine, like, Keith Richards, if he knows there's heroin in the room. Oh, don't give me none of that. I'm clean. I don't want that. I mean, it was that kind of moment. And I wonder if there is some kind of deep scarring repression thing that you would have to then uncover, I think, or maybe.
And maybe if you were writing the obituary, you would have a chance to find that out. Yes.
And I don't know how I plan this, but so we actually going to have 3 death questions in a row.
Whoa.
Okay, so question 2.
I'm into death. That's
okay. Okay, have you ever been close to death? Have you ever had a near miss, hell scare?
I don't know if that I was close to death. I mean, but I have had cancer, and and I went through treatment for cancer.
Oh, wow.
And not that it was, I mean, it was at a very early stage.
So that's still a moment where, like, if shit went really bad, or if this wasn't found out,
idea of death than my mortality.
Okay, so what did you learn? That's the second part of the question. What did you learn then from that? I could have, a little bit different moment.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly think I learned that I'm not afraid to die.
Oh, that's interesting. Does that then change your decision-making process?
I think in some senses it does. I mean, in terms of, you know, because I could die at any point in time. So I think that like choosing to come and go to a concert.
Oh, yeah, that drives you a little
I think
further.
Has driven me. I mean, I think I do this more now than I did 15 years ago.
Mm.
Because it's important to do those things.
Yeah, which I wonder, maybe, you know, the wrong podcast, but if we could go back and fix it and overdub. Maybe it's that question of, you know, knowing that you kind of have to take risks, or that the world is risky in and of itself. That maybe it is exercised in this, like, aesthetic thing, you know.
It's as like, enjoy what's here now, and...
Yeah. Whereas, you know, maybe what we were just talking about, this the wanting to intellectualize things, gets exercised through this way. So that makes sense. So that makes sense. All right. Question five. Are you ready? You're almost off the hook. All right. So you die.
Okay.
You're dead.
All right.
And you're not that great, and you're not that terrible. What would purgatory be like? What would your purgatory be?
Because
everybody asks, what would your hell be? What would your heaven be? I want to know, what's your purgatory going to be like? If you end up in purgatory, if it was your, the Anvok personal purgatory, what the hell would that be?
Because I don't think I believe in purgatory. So.
Well, you probably don't believe in reincarnation either, but you answered the question in the last podcast. So you have to say, purgatory's real, you're there, and it's a personal, tailored, custom-made purgatory. What the hell's that like?
God. Because I do keep thinking about what hell, you know.
The redemptive hell. The hell kind of scaled back a bit. The hell you know you'll get out of one day.
That I'll get out of?
You know? Is it purgatory's mildly annoying? You know, I guess that's the thing. Like, what constitutes that degree of punishment.
So that would be it. So I wouldn't have to listen to train songs all day, but maybe some of the day. Is that it? Like
you'd wake up to that or something.
But I wouldn't have to listen to it all day because it's purgatory and not hell.
Yes.
And I could...
You would be redeemed through...
So I would get some good music in addition to some...
Yes, at the end of the day. You would have to earn it or something. You'd have to earn your fried rabbit.
So I got to work my way through purgatory.
So you would have to go through the trained discography.
And then I could move on to something.
Then you could move
better.
On, yes.
That way, yes, that might be a better kind of looking at the whole idea of purgatory. Like, you know, yeah. I don't
Which
know.
Which is sort of Dante's thing. Like, they're still suffering, but, you know, then they... progress.
But then they move beyond it. So, yeah, I don't, wow, that's, I mean, but it's a hard question to answer because I can think of all these hellish things. But
yeah, that's why I answered, you know, I think it's like, the more interesting question.
Is like, what is that purgatory kind of thing? And I think I've gotten so out of this idea of purgatory that, you know, in just looking at, you know, what are those ideas all about? Like hell and purgatory. And it's like, you know, so hell's supposed to totally freak us out and scare us. So is purgatory supposed to scare us a little?
But
it's supposed to scare us, but we still have hope. So it's.
Yeah, which I think that's the thing, is that there's always the escape clause or the fix or the, you know, the escape hatch. I mean, in some ways, I think about. And it's not just religion, but a lot of people's belief systems sometimes, it's like Batman's tool belt. Because if you remember the 60s Batman, it was always, you know, Hell in the Water was the episode where he was carrying the aerosol shark repellent. And it just so happened at I'm carrying this today. And next week it'll be the grappling hook because I need to get on the roof of the bank to foil the robbery. And I just happened to pack it that day. And I mean, I think in some ways, I mean, people can, I think, do that. You know, well, that was a bad person, but they'll be okay.
They'll be
okay. And everything else tells me that they're, you know, going
to. So we're okay. You still have a chance. We can.
You're still okay. You still have a chance. Yeah. I think that's about it. Truly, I can say now, our next episode will eventually happen, and it will be about something. It's 4:04 a.m. Our homepage, as always, is gonnadiepodcast.com. You can get old episodes, new episodes, whatever. We're also on the Apple Steve Jobs interface. You can find us there. You can follow us on Twitter at gonnadiepodcast is our Twitter handle. We have Facebook and Google Plus pages called We're All Gonna Die. You can just find us there. Thanks to Brett Zorick, as always, for the lovely theme music. Later, meets.